I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The following podcast contains quite a bit of explicit and slightly fruity language. If you're listening to this somewhere where you have young children, you might want to pop in your headphones. Now, on with the show.
If you can't laugh at yourself, then you're never going to see the flaws. It's the flaws that are funny. The good bits aren't funny particularly. The good bits are great bits you need to cherish and look after. But the flaws are what makes you a human being.
Welcome to the Humorology Podcast with me, Paul Barros, and my glittering lineup of guests from the worlds of business, sport and entertainment, who are going to share their wisdom and their use of humour. Humorology is the study of how humor can dramatically improve your business success and your life. Humorology puts the fun into business fundamentals, increases the value of your laughing stock, and puts a punchline back into your bottom line. Please remember to like, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. My guest on this edition of the Humorology Podcast is a multi-award-winning songwriter, performer, humorist, and quite frankly, national treasure. For over 40 years, she's been delighting audiences around the world with her mellifluous musical melodies, coupled with laugh-out-loud lacerating lyrics. She's a founder member of the fabulously funny, fascinating AIDA. And they regularly pack theatres around the globe and also rack up tens of millions of YouTube views. Her tremendous talent is to create the classic comedy combination of wild, wicked and wonderful songs that somehow manage to make even the meekest of maiden aunts laugh at the riskiest of risque ribaldry. Dilly Keen, welcome to the Humorology Podcast.
Thank you very much indeed.
Well, I said all that because I mean it, and we've worked together in the past, and you've been making me laugh for many, many years. Was the young Dilly Keen fascinated by comedy and music?
Yes, I was. And I think it comes through the family from my grandmother. Apparently, she could do she had an extraordinary party trick. She would tuck her violin underneath her chin and say, right, who's this? And she would play a sort of little figure of music and people would go, it's the bank manager. So she could do that with music. And I've always been fascinated with music that suits funny lyrics. But I also get the love of words from my father. As a child, I was very sick. For long, long periods of time, I was in hospital, in and out, and I was stuck in my bedroom at home at the top of quite a tall house, not allowed to get out of bed because you weren't encouraged to get out of bed when you were sick in those days. It's a long time ago. Yeah. And so my mother put the family, as we used to call it, gramophone, and they had a very large collection of Gilbert and Sullivan, and I just played through the Gilbert and Sullivan repertoire. And Mum got me the libretti. And so I studied them and I had a dictionary and I used to look up the name, what the words meant. So I knew what trepanning was when I was about 10.
Well, which is an important word for comedy, basically.
Well, it was for Gilbert. I've never used it yet.
There's an NHS song waiting to happen that we're going back to trepanning. So tell me more about that obsession as a childhood. I mean, it sounds like it was through necessity, because you needed something to keep yourself or your spirits up during those years. Well, why was it so obsessive, really, I suppose?
I'm not sure that it was obsessive. I mean, I don't look back at myself and think, cheapers, I was an obsessive child. I just think it was there, and it was one of the ways that the days whiled by. And because I was very musical, I could play the stuff. And the tunes are infectiously charming. And the rhyming and the structure of Gilbert's language is impeccable. And so it beguiled me rather than obsessed me.
Okay.
I still return to it. When I'm a bit down in the dumps, I listen to Gilbert Sullivan.
Oh, really? So it's still the through line through your life is
absolutely
Gilbert.
It is the ultimate through line. Or when I'm incredibly busy and I need a huge amount of energy. For instance, when I had my partner was 70, we decided to have a party, and I asked him what the budget was, and I said, well, that means I'm doing the catering then. So I had a week to prepare food for 100 people, and I listened nonstop to Gilbert and Sullivan, and I just whizzed myself through it.
So, it sounds fantastic.
It's my tonic.
Oh, that's nice. A tonic for the troops. What, apart from Gilbert and Sullivan, what makes you laugh?
Well, surprise makes me laugh. So if a lyric comes along that's surprising, it usually makes me laugh. It's not what the unexpected makes me laugh. I like wit. I like clever humour. But I also, I am a sucker for Dumb and Dumber. So I love it, falling over and things like that. You know, it's very hard to explain to somebody what makes you laugh, because it can be so many different things. And it can also, when people attempt to make you laugh or something's sort of supposed to be funny on television, you sit there going, oh my goodness, why do people find this funny? I never found Cannon and Ball funny. I never found Little and Large funny, but I still, cry with Martha to Malcolm and Wise.
So it is just it's a personal taste thing,
isn't it?
And is there anything that in the modern realm that you suddenly go, okay, that's really funny, or is everything sort of?
Well, put it this way: if Gavin and Stacey have a Christmas special, Do Not Disturb Dilly Keen. just with my face, already like this, smiling ear to ear and my cheeks all tight with excitement because it's Gavin and Stacey. I absolutely love it. Outnumbered, I think, is as witty as can be. I love watching Flo and Joan. I think I'm thrilled with what they're doing.
Well, that's interesting, because that's musical comedy as well. And,
yes, very much so. And I like to fancy, and my imaginings have a sort of absurd grandeur that I'm passing the flame on, that they're taking out the torch on. But they're very good. They're very clever. I admire them hugely, and I'm thrilled with what they're doing.
Well, we've both got a background in musical comedy. Why do you think music and comedy works so well and cuts through so well? What makes it different?
Well, you can listen to a funny song again and again, and you can't listen to a joke again and again. Music, it gives it endurance. And the other thing about it is that people will often get it wrong, and they come back to the show and they go, oh, that's why it was funny. For instance, we have a song. How rude can I be on this?
Absolutely. Anything you like on this.
We have a song, a Christmas song now, which is about 5 years old. It's gone a bit bonkers on the internet. And people say to me, I do love your song, Don't Be a for Christmas. And I say, it's not. It's Try Not to Be a It's Christmas. One is an order that can't possibly be fulfilled, and the other is a plea. And that's much funnier because the assumption is that it's is that whoever you're talking to is without any shadow of a doubt going to be a but could you, and is generally all year, but just try not to be. It's Christmas. Try, please. And it's much funnier. So when people come back and hear the correct lyrics, they still go away singing, I love that song, don't be a for Christmas. They get it wrong because they haven't got musical brains, but it's much funnier in reality. And so I think humor, if you get humor in songwriting, it stands the test of time much better than a joke.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And by the way, all our listeners, we're coming up to Christmas, and whatever time of year, look up that song. It is hilarious. And also, it's very precise, as you say. And I love that whole idea that it's so precise. I love the Jerry Seinfeld quote, which is, comedy is the closest thing to justice. If you're funny, you survive. If you're not, you don't. Do you think that's true?
I don't know what context he means it in. It sounds terribly deep, but I have no idea. I know some people who aren't funny at all, and they survive fine.
Oh, no, I think he's talking about in terms of performance, actually.
Oh,
I think it's the ultimate Roman.
Boris Johnson, who is funny and is capable of being very, very amusing. And is in many ways sort of surviving and yet not surviving.
Yeah, no, I think that that Jerry Seinfeld's talking about that whole sort of Roman amphitheatre thing about you survive or you don't survive, based on, and it's very clear, you either make them laugh or you don't.
If you're doing Pinter, yeah, or if you're doing, I mean, I think, you know, I think Chekhov is always better performed by people with an innate funny bone here or there. And Pinter too, but in many ways. But there are an awful lot of performances that don't require you to be funny. And there are very good, very unfunny performers who have great depth.
Well, talking about funny, tell me a funny story about something that's happened to you in your illustrious life.
I have been mercifully blessed with a sort of fairly straightforward career. And the funniest thing that's ever happened was one of those moments you can't really explain it. It was, I was on stage and I had put on a tiny bit of weight and my rather skin tight dress suddenly went and split down the side. And it was fascinating going to, and Marilyn Cutts was in the group then, and she came over to the piano. Luckily, it had split upstage as opposed to downstage, which meant the audience would see. I was seated at the piano. It was my left seam. And I said to Marilyn, I went, Marilyn, my dress was split. And she went, yes. My dress was split. She went, yes. I walked off stage. So I had to get up. And luckily, I had a jacket. Which I'd taken off, and I lifted up the jacket and explained what had happened to the audience. I said, I'm terribly sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I have to sidle off stage now because my dress is slit. It's not that funny, but there we are. It was funny at the time. He had to be there.
Actually, that's one of the things that, as a performer and somebody who's performed the highest level for so many years, isn't it about owning that thing and telling the audience what's happened rather than sidling away.
That's a cabaret. I mean, obviously there are songs where you don't want it to happen because we have a fairly kind of strong tradition now of dipping into seriousness at least once during the show when you don't want the microphones to crackle or you don't want someone to shout, get them off you! from the audience or anything, not that they have for a while. That's the great thing about you being older.
Well, I'm sure they're loving the serious side, because I've listened to a lot of your son, and there's the bathos of some of the songs is beautiful. And I was just listening to Song for Tom the other day, And I advise listeners and to actually catch that, because it's one of the most, it is funny, but it's in a, such a sweet, loving, touching way that it really transports the thing. Is this something, because truth, humour and truth are very, very closely aligned. Is this something that you have come more to in later years, or is it always been there?
No, Song for Tom is quite an old song. Song for Tom is about 25 years. I mean, I don't know what the first really, really good true song. No, I wrote a song years and years and years and years ago called Saturday Night, which is actually still a lovely song about sitting on your own when everybody else seems to be out partying on a Saturday night and thinking, oh, what do I do next? And it's got a couple of really good, funny lines in it. Yeah, no, it's always been there, that sort of, as you say, that sort of somewhere between pathos and bathos, the absurdity of the human condition fascinates me. And Song for Tom is a lovely song because it's about the inability to allow yourself to fall in love, to let yourself be vulnerable. And I think that's worth exploring and song.
No, and I think you explore it so well. I'm trying to remember the name of the song. It's about dating a married man.
Much More Married.
Much More Married, which is another of my favourites.
Do you remember Dan Crawford? Ran the King's Head Theatre.
Oh, yes.
I remember when I sang that first, it's a very old song that I sang at the Piccadilly Theatre when it would have been in the in about 1987.
Yes.
I wrote that. And Dan came up to me and said, very, very good song. Very, the best satirical song I have ever heard.
Oh.
Which from Dan was very, very pleasing because I loved it.
Well, thrilling, because he really knew his stuff and he'd seen most everything.
It was a bit of an exaggeration, but I've cherished the memory.
No, I don't think it is an exaggeration. I think that for you, does humour and truth have to touch to make the song really work?
No. It depends what song you're writing. Now, for the listening millions, Much More Married is a song that was actually happened because of something that happened in my life. I started dating a man who and I was in my early 40s, so sort of it's that you don't know who, you know, you meet somebody and you fancy them, you don't really know much about their background and you wonder why they're on their own. Well, every time I met him, there was just something slightly more compromised about his situation. The first time I met him, he was on the verge of finalizing divorce. Second time I met him, he was on the verge of instructing his divorce lawyer. Third time I met him, he was separated. And the fourth time I met him, he was actually living in the same house as his wife, but separated, living in a different wing. I mean, what was it? Buckingham Palace. And so I stopped seeing him. I just stopped answering the phone because I thought, I can't be bothered with this. Because I wouldn't want, you know, much as he was fun and everything, I wouldn't want some woman to do that to me. Quite clearly, he was a lying toe rag. Anyway, about 6 months later, the phone went. And it was him. And I answered around. Oh, hello. He said, hello, I've been trying to get hold of you. I've left lots of messages, but I, you know, haven't heard from you. And I said, yes. Yes, oh, right. Oh, I probably didn't get the maybe. I've always found an imaginary secretary is great. I think my secretary must have left me a note or maybe forgot. I have no secretary, don't be silly. Anyway, so he eventually said, would you like to come for dinner? And I went, no, I don't think so. Thank you, but no. He said, well, how about lunch? I said, no, I don't think so either. And he said, why? I said, because every time I met you, you're a little bit more married than you said. Ting!
There's
long. in my head, oh, that's a song. And anyway, the conversation finished. And he said, oh, I didn't think you cared about that sort of thing. And I said, I don't. And that was the end of the phone call. And it was very pleasing because you very, very rarely get closure on anything in life. And that was closure. Yes. Yeah. So that's where that song comes from. Obviously, it's, you know, when you listen to the lyrics of the song, the imaginary relationship in the song, it goes a lot further than I did with the man, the Irishman, whose name I've now forgotten. The me in the song is obviously much more involved, and it ends up with finding out that the wife is actually pregnant. But it comes from that point of absolute truth. Yes, that's what happened to me. And I've just written a song about the sort of situation for me during COVID, which again was one of those moments you go, ping, I've just said a title of a song. I was in a shop. This man was taking quite a long time. It was a very small shop. And I was waiting for him. You know, we were in masks too. And he would turn around and said, I'm so sorry I'm taking so long. I said, it's all right. Don't worry. I've got nothing to do. And all day to do it in. Blues.
Yeah.
Song.
Ping
However,
again.
You then write a song. Like, for instance, there was all that. There was quite a craze a few years ago of a very famous Hollywood A-listers having surrogate babies. And we wrote a song about an orangutan's having my baby. Well, that's clearly not possible, but it comes from a kind of grain of truth that people recognised. Mm-hmm. And then another song, for instance, Mother, Dear Mother, is a song about, you know, taking your mother to Switzerland to Dignitas. And that doesn't come from any truth at all. It comes because Dignitas is there. There's an element of, you know, people recognise a horrible possibility, but that doesn't come from any kind of truth in my life or anyone's that I know.
No, but you take sort of ideas as well, yeah. Which are, yeah, in the collective consciousness as well. You said earlier on that you've had some people who you were definitely not funny, you know, and because I was going to ask, is everyone funny? But what I'm going to ask now is, can comedy be taught in any sphere or realm?
No.
You think it's
like musicianship. It's just you've got it, or it's like a gift for gardening, or an ability to ride a horse, you know, we have attributes as human beings which are different from person to person, and some people are funny and some people are very funny. Some people are not funny at all.
But these traits can be developed, can't they? If you have a core of funny, you can develop that because you've been doing it all your life and hopefully I've been doing it as well. You develop that core. But because I'm with you that the core is there, that you either hear the beats or you don't.
Yeah, I don't think I'm funnier now than I was 40 years ago. I can understand it now. I can analyse it now, but I'm not funnier. I haven't improved.
So you don't
all
think...
All I've got is I've got a sort of an assurance on stage, I think, probably, that I didn't have then, but I gurn less, maybe. The audience might not tell me that. I'll gurn less in pursuit of a laugh. I'll let laughs go, and that's experience. And I know moments when not to get a laugh. I think that's experience as well. But no, I'm not funnier. I walked on stage at university and everyone said, you have funny bones, and I didn't understand what that was. But I knew I was funny because I'd been funny at school. I was very, very funny as Rainbow the janitor in The Happiest Days of Your Life. I gave a superb performance and a grizzled beard. Yes, I bought the house down. I was always funny.
And so that inherent hearing the funny and knowing instinctively... You think that. So, I mean, this is a podcast which is for everyone, but also for people in business. I when I train people, I'm always, they go, I've got to start with a joke. And if they're inherently not funny, my job is to make them not do the joke.
Because, absolutely.
Everything. So what would your advice be, you know, is be, understand yourself enough so you know who you are?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I'm just thinking there when you know, somebody who was inherently one of the unfunniest people, but made one of the great jokes of all time, which was, the lady's not returning. You turn if you want to. You know, it was the other way around, wasn't it? You turn if you want to, the lady's not returning. Great moment. And she delivered it spot on. And she could be devastatingly funny, although she hadn't a single funny bone in her body, but because she was very clever with her words. And I'll never forget her, that last time she did PMQ. I rushed home to watch it because it was all so exciting. We were getting rid of her at last. And somebody said, would she be interested in being the governor? Something about the Bank of England. And Dennis Skinner, who was very funny, said, she'll be the governor. And she said, I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind. And she had such delight in her eyes. It was terribly funny. I thought, oh, all right, I think we'll miss you a bit. you know, there were moments that she could understand. So yes, of course, even supremely serious, unfunny people can see moments for humour.
So it's about understanding your limitations and working within them, is it?
Yes, and trusting your joke writers.
Ah, so trusting somebody to go, if you say this in exactly this order, with this beat in between, it'll work.
That line was, you know, the lady's not returning, was written for her. She really doubted it, but they went, yeah, you do. And it's one of her most memorable moments.
Well, you see, the interesting thing, and we're talking about Margaret Thatcher, the interesting thing for me, I thought she had an instinct of knowing what she didn't have and working on it. Because if you remember, she worked with the RADA coach to lower, was she go down two or three semitones in the pitch of her voice.
Mm.
And so therefore, I think that she will have gone to somebody and said, I need to be funny. I need a joke. How do I make it work?
Without doubt, yes. And I think that was part of, I mean, I think, you know, they do try to train you in public life, if you go into public life, don't they? They have teams of people who are ready there, you know, to train you in deportment and how to put a speech across, how to read from a text, and how to make jokes as well. And, you know, she was, I think, a clever woman for obviously she was a very clever woman, but she was willing to learn and willing to school herself.
Which I think feeds into, you can, you know, with a modicum of a funny bone or a tiny little bit of a funny bone, you can actually build on that to an extent if you're smart.
But Paul, are you saying people can be funny around a dinner table, or they can be funny in their speeches or in holding a meeting? Because what you do is help people to communicate with humour in business. I still think, you know, that come the moment when they're at, you know, at a dinner party, they can still be unutterable bores.
Yes, I think that, but that's not my job to get them through the dinner party, to be honest with you.
Here's a joke you can tell at a dinner party.
Yeah, that's right. Well, actually, I'll just get them to put one of your songs on the gramophone and stand back and bask in the glow. What would the world be like without humour?
Intolerable. Intolerable.
You think that it would just be a terrible place?
Yes. It would be appalling.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
I mean, I'll just give you a little example, which has happened lately. One of my greatest friends has just died. David Johnson, legend of Edinburgh, legendary producer, legendary bon vivant, giant personality. And he was, of course, well known at Edinburgh. And the funniest things that somebody said to me yesterday was, you know, because he was taking a while to die, and we were all, communicating in these sort of terrible solitary vigils. And John, his business partner, said to a great friend, he said, "It's like Edinburgh. It's just like Edinburgh." Or David always he said, "If I'm still here in Edinburgh on Monday, shoot me." And there he'd be on it a Monday in Edinburgh, holding court and going out to dinner to Bar Napoli. And that made us all cry laughing, even though it's in terribly sad circumstances. You've got to be able to leaven life. It's the yeast of life.
Yeah, no, I agree. I made, when my father died, we went to Hungary for his memorial service. My father was a Hungarian refugee, and we went back, and I walked into a very sad room where my brother, who lives in Hungary, and his wife and the children were. And I instinctively did something that was could be conceived in bad taste, because he died before his 90th birthday and we were going to have a big party. And I went, "Typical bastard, stopped us from having a party." And, you know, and there was shock in the room, and the shock led to laughter, which yes. broke the atmosphere. And we do need that.
Without doubt.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember John Cleese's memorial speech for Graham Chapman. I thought that was a great example of it, whereby...
No, but I did hear his speech for Barry Took, which was very funny. His memorial speech for Barry, because I sang at Barry Took's memorial.
Oh, right. Well, and it is about lightening the atmosphere at that. And, you know, I know it's a... It's something that everybody says, but it's what they would have wanted. And, if, you know, you'd want people to miss you, but you'd also want people to remember you in a fond way and laugh with you as well, yeah. which I think is important. Do you find yourself funny?
No.
No, not at all?
No. Not in the slightest bit funny. No, I take myself far too seriously. And I'm quite a boring person.
Well, I don't think so. I think our listeners will think completely the opposite.
Rigid.
You bore yourself rigid.
Yeah.
But is that where, because you're giving everything on stage and you're putting everything into the work? I mean,
I don't know, really. No, I don't find myself funny. No, I find myself absurd.
Oh.
I find the human condition absolutely absurd. I'm very disappointed in myself.
Really? Is that your driver? What is that? What drives you forward all the time?
Ooh, I don't know what my driver is. No, I think I don't know. I don't know what my driver is. And I've never sought to find out, really, because I think I'm not sure that finding out is helpful. I mean, I suppose I had quite an unhappy childhood. I think that's my driver.
But the drive for performance, for perfection in songs, for getting a laugh. I mean,
that could be a pleasure of the work.
Okay, but that's a driver.
I love tinkering with it for a long time, and tinkering with the rhymes and saying and of course, my co-writer, Adele Anderson, is as nitpicky as me, which drives us both completely bananas. And she'll say, I think it should be of, not by, there. We've recorded by, we have to go back. we're fussy people, but that's no bad thing, to be fussy in your work.
No, but I'm intrigued that you don't actually find yourself funny. You there's no level. You understand you are funny.
Okay, when I'm writing a song, I know I can come up with funny stuff. And then, but it's the stuff I find funny, not me I find funny.
Oh, but then you are a large part of making it funny.
Oh, yes. I mean, when we wrote the dogging song, I don't think we've ever laughed so much in our lives. And brilliant. Just the kind of huge, kind of gut, painful laugh of findings of Adele saying, Adele wrote, I would say, two-thirds of that song. It's always ascribed to me, but it's not, it's Adele's, two-thirds. I just kept kind of pushing her. And what I'm very good at is a very good driver of, I can say, no, that's not right, but there's something in that. So I'm a good editor. And I'm credited with far too much of the material, but I'm a much better editor than any of the people I've written with. That's my skill. Is seeing the overall picture of what we're trying to write. So the dogging song, I'd say Adele wrote between two-thirds and three-quarters of it. However, then I will come up with the killer line. By now something we were thrilled to bits, and I said, I love to feel a copper's truncheon in between my tits. Yeah. She just, then we just laughed for about 20 minutes.
That's worth the entrance fee alone, to be honest with you, that line. But and for our listeners who haven't heard the dogging song, become one of tens of millions who log on to YouTube and see it, because it is one of the classic funny songs of all time. Yeah. And I say that as somebody who has been sort of in the comedy song business for many, many years. And it's hard to...
There are moments when I never want to sing it again. It's sort of like a ball and chain, because I've written so much better stuff, more complex or more interesting things. Nah, it's just a piece of doggerel, but it's unassailable. It's an unassailably funny song. And people write to me and say, now that COVID struck, dogging is one of the few things we can do open air. How about an extra verse? I always write back and say, no, do not tamper with perfection. It's perfect. I can be quite arrogant about things. I think it's a perfect song. perfect piece of shit, but it's perfect.
No, no, but it is perfection. It is. You don't want to mess with it, really.
It's the funniest song I've ever come across.
Well, yeah,
I still find it funny.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
I think it helps, though, that you know that it's been sung by a woman of 60 plus. I know I've got a sort of posh voice, and I've never tried to change that, although it was very fashionable when I was young.
It gets funnier with time, of course. And actually, I think that, you know, you have the classic talent of being able to write with Adele, write these songs, but also very few people can bring that laugh home, which is that stagecraft, which I think is, you know, because a lot of the laughs are coming from what you described as gurning earlier on, which I don't think. I think you're laughing it in, or you're doing the nodding it in. The thing, and I think
that as an actress, so it's the same every time. I'm terribly precise about everything.
Yeah, so, but very, very few actors can do comedy successfully. I always find that, you know, there is that line where, you know, tragedy is easy and comedy is difficult. How do you feel about that?
It depends. I've done plays in which I've been very bad. I played the nurse in Romeo and Juliet. I was fucking terrible. You know, I'm not sure. I think, you know, I think Shakespeare's really difficult. It's really difficult for me. I just don't cleave to the language at all. You know, you need a lightness of touch, and you need the right actors. You need the right actors for tragedy, and you need the right actors for drama. Something in between, you know, which can be funny, but not necessarily hilarious.
Is it important to be able to laugh at yourself?
Yes. Yes. That's why I say I don't find myself funny. I find myself absurd.
So, I mean, in general, because people are going to take away things from this, why is it so important to be able to laugh at yourself?
Makes you human, humane as well. If you can't laugh at yourself, then you're never going to see the flaws. It's the flaws that are funny. The good bits aren't funny particularly. The good bits are great bits you need to cherish and look after. But the flaws are what makes you humane. It makes you a human being. And if we only ever laugh at other people, then that's rather cruel, isn't it?
Yes, and I think, being able to laugh at yourself humanises you in the eyes of other people. You become sort of, you don't become somebody on a pedestal, you become somebody at their level.
Yes, I see one thing where you're getting at is, when you asked, do I find myself funny? There are two ways to answer that. Am I amused by myself? Do I find myself sort of witty I'm not Noel Coward. I don't drop witticisms. I'm not amusing like that. I can be good fun to be with. I know that. I can also be a dead bore to be with. But what I do find is I do find myself absurd to the point of amusement. I'm amused by my absurdities, which is slightly different.
Do you think people laugh enough in their workplace? Now, we worked in show business for years, so there is a lot of laughter, but most people work in offices and sort of, you know, shops and places. Do you think it should be mandated more, that there should be more chances to laugh?
Yes, I do. I think laughter is a great lubricant. I worked for many years, because I didn't enter showbiz till I was 26. And I worked in an advertising agency in various lawyers' offices and things like that, as in secretarial capacity. And I worked in bars and things. Of course, bars, you can have a joke with people. But you know, in offices, it's very dull. And I've remember fleeing the headquarters of William Hill, because this guy kept coming in and going, well, roll on Friday, eh? And well, he'd said it all Monday, and by Tuesday morning I'd had enough, and I just walked out. I couldn't face it, because if you're there all week saying roll on Friday, that's misery. Yeah. Whereas, you know, if you can look forward to working, that you can have a laugh with people, get down to your work. I remember I was working in a company that made blinds. And I had such a good laugh with the women in the offices there, because I was typing the invoices. And I'm a very fast typer. And I would do three quarters of an hour, really hard, just ferocious typing. And then I go, right, I'm taking a quarter of an hour off, because I'd start getting things wrong. And I'd crack jokes and things like that. We'd have a bit of a laugh around the office and things like that. And then they would be hugely amused, because they would go, right, I'm going to set an invoice every 70 seconds. They would be in knots at this sort of obsessive, you know, thing. But I was partly doing it because it was a very dull job and it made light in the office and it was fun.
Yeah, well, part of the whole humorology movement, as I like to call it now, is about getting more laughter into the workplace, because I do think that it actually helps the bottom line. If people are happier, they're going to be more productive, don't you think?
Absolutely. And nobody ever typed more invoices than me, but I did actually take a quarter of an hour every hour off to go... And as a result, my productivity was much better than Elaine's, who I was replacing.
Well, OK, now, well, let's put your advertising hat back on in your business case. If you had to make a business case for humour, what would you include? Why is it going to be that much better for business?
If you make your surroundings and your workspace pleasant, people will work better. Simple as that.
As simple as that. And your return on investment is the fact that there is more productivity, essentially.
Yes. And actually, it makes it cheerier for the, you know, the customer. I'm aware that, you know, as I get older, I could be turned into one of those women who says, oh, nice day out. Oh, isn't it lovely? What a shame about the weather. Oh, et cetera. But I always test my if I go through the till, I try and have a tiny bit of conversation with who is on the till, so that there is a little human exchange. And because I'm now you know, at the sort of unembarrassable age of 68, I don't mind about doing that. I mean, I wouldn't have done it when I was 30, but I think actually you should do it at every age. You should try to communicate. Whenever I go into the bank, and I used to get money out, they'd say, how do you want it? You know, and as you still do it, you say, I want to change it all into euros. They say, how do you want it? And I say, always say doubled, please. It's so, I mean, it's, I don't find it funny anymore, but I just go doubled. They look up and they go, oh, sorry, I can't do that. You know, and it's, you just think, oh God, it must be dismal working here. You know, because actually, It's a gentle joke. It's not going to, you know, nobody's going to take me up on it. You know, nobody's going to try and steal it. But, you know, it's an effort to sort of make a moment of humour between me and the teller. And then sometimes the teller goes, oh, I wish I could. It'd be nice. Yeah.
Well, yes. But what you're doing is you're bringing a little bit of light into yes. their world, aren't you?
Oh, how would you like it? Could you put it on the 3:30? That can't melt, please.
Well, it also delivering it with a straight face makes it so much funnier as well, doesn't it?
I don't know if it does. I very rarely make people laugh, but it's partly to sort of to lighten my day. As well.
Well, but that's what it does, doesn't it? It's a symbiotic process. If you bring something into somebody else's day, you know, as a psychologist, what we say is, if you want anybody to go into any state, you have to go into that state first. And so therefore, by being light and everything, you take that person into that world with you. Have you ever taken a joke too far? Cross the line.
Yeah, we've got lines wrong in song. Yeah, and we've had to, let's change that tonight.
So have you ever gotten yourself out of trouble by using humour?
No, because you see, I was a very funny, lively, scatty teenager, and I found it didn't work with my teachers.
That's good. In business, is it survival of the fittest or survival of the funniest?
Fittest.
Really? You think that it's as clear as that?
Yes, I do. I unfortunately do subscribe to the idea that a lot of the most successful business people are somewhat emotionally detached. Not all of them, by any means, but you think of someone like Philip Green. Mm. Emotional detachment that says, I can give all this money to my wife and oh dear, now the business is gone. Oh dear, how many thousand jobs? One of our chief Brexiteers, a very charming and eloquent man, but can be one of the chief Brexiteers and take vast subsidies from the EU for his vast farms, and move quite a bit of his operation to Singapore. How does somebody not see that that's massively unfunny and massively detached from being a good human?
You think that actually a level, and I'm not describing these two people as psychopaths, but a level of psychopathy,
yes,
actually works better in business than the level of humour.
Because it's allowed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we don't have the kind of legal framework that stops it from happening. I don't know how you frame it, but name me a well-known hilarious. I mean, Alan Sugar has a very good sense of humour, I think. I think you find him very dry and very droll. And I know he's an absolute tough businessman. My partner came across him quite a lot in the city. He, you know, says, oh, he's a very tough businessman, but he's quite clearly got a wonderful sense of humour. So it can work. I'm slightly nervous about the idea that you put fittest against funniest, because I don't think it's either or. I don't think you need to be funny, and I don't think you necessarily need to be fit. You just need to be there at the right moment sometimes.
Dilly, we've come to the part of the show, which the end part of the show, which is called Quickfire Questions, which one day we'll have a jingle for, I promise you, but maybe you could write one. So quickfire questions. Who's the funniest person that you've met then?
John Diamond.
Really? The author and journalist on John Diamond? Yeah.
Yes. I almost lost my lunch laughing at John Diamond. It was just wonderfully funny.
What book makes you laugh?
Diary of a Nobody by George and Wheaton Grossmith. Equal to The Wimbledon Poisoner by Nigel Williams.
Oh, okay. Two for the price of one.
Yeah.
What film makes you laugh?
Groundhog Day.
What film makes you laugh?
Groundhog Day.
What film? No. See, we couldn't resist it, could we?
Absolutely.
Okay, slightly, what word makes you laugh?
Discombobulate.
Oh, lovely word. Lovely word.
And sometimes, as an alternative, discombobulate.
Oh.
I was really discombobulated. I love the American use of language.
Oh, yeah. The way they mangle it.
No.
In a good way.
No, old-fashioned words like discombobulate. Okay. Perfectly valid word.
Okay, I will be looking that up. This is slightly serious because I know because of your eco blog that this is very dear to your heart, but what's not funny?
Plastic.
Yeah. And by the way, everybody should read Dilly's blog, Shit You Don't Need, because then you'll see. And you've been saying it for a long time, and it's all coming true, unfortunately. Would you rather be considered clever or funny?
Clever.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I would argue that you have to be clever to be funny. So would you agree with that?
No, I know some people who aren't hugely bright who are just wonderfully funny.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah. They're just funny in a different way.
So describe the ways they're funny then.
Well, I don't think Cannon and Ball were terribly funny, terribly clever, but they were funny, you know, not for me.
Yeah.
And it didn't make me laugh particularly. But or Jimmy Cricket, I don't think of him as having a, you know, he's not Dara O'Brien, but he's adorably funny.
Well, okay. Yeah. Well, I would sort of argue that actually that they probably are very bright to do those characters and get that.
Oh, they have a bright, but you know, I mean, Dara O'Brien is clever.
Yeah, that's true.
Sandy Talks Week is clever. Stephen Fry, clever. They've got brains the size of Europe. You know, there's a different breed out there now, you know, from what there was when we were growing up.
Well, final question. Desert Island gags. You've got one gag that you can take to a desert island with you. What is it?
It's a joke. Do I have to tell it?
Yes.
Mrs. McTavish and Mrs. Taylor are out at tea, and they're having tea in Jenner's, which is a very, very respectable department store in Edinburgh, as I'm sure you remember. They're having tea. Mrs. McTavish says, oh, those scones were delicious, weren't they? Oh, they were, Mrs. McTavish. Mrs. Taylor, the scones were lovely. They're lovely, fresh cream and jam. And oh, look, shall we be wee devils and have a cake? Oh! Oh, you're very naughty, but why not, eh? So it's a Thursday after all. So Betty, would you bring over the cake trolley, please? She says, Betty brings over the cake. I said, oh, the cakes look lovely. They do. Betty, are they fresh cream or are they cream pâtissier or the fresh cream, ma'am, fresh cream? And, well, tell me, Betty, is that a cake or a meringue? No, you're no rang, it's a cake.
Oh, well, that's one for all our Scottish listeners around the world. That's brilliant. You've been a wonderful guest and a wonderful inspiration. Keep writing those beautiful and hilarious songs. Dilly Keane, thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you very much for asking me.
The Humorology Podcast was hosted by Paul Barros and produced by Simon Banks. Music by Steve Hayworth, creative direction by Les Hughes, and additional research by Helen Sykes. Please remember to subscribe, like, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. This has been a Big Sky production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.